In this episode of the Creativity in Motion podcast, we talk with fight choreographer Jaren Bray.
If you're not even like aware of something as a possibility, then you can't use it as a solution. So I'm striving right now to just try to learn as much martial arts technique as possible.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Hi, my name is Chris Hollow.
And I'm Mark Masri. This is episode number 23 of Creativity in Motion, a podcast about creativity where we talk with creatives of all kinds to find out why they create and especially how they use creativity to overcome obstacles.
In this episode, we're talking with actor, filmmaker, and fight coordinator, Jaren Bray.
Before we start talking to Jaren, I need to tell you about our sponsor, NOCI College of Art. NOCI College opened in 1973 as a fine arts school and has transformed into Tennessee's only private art college. They offer bachelor's degree programs in commercial illustration, graphic design, video and film, and photography, and they offer an associate's degree in culinary arts. NOCI has a beautiful 55,000 square foot facility that was built with the artistic student in mind. It includes computer labs, production suites, photography and video studios, and a fully stocked equipment cage. Everything students need to get creative. To learn more about NOCI College of Art, you can visit NOCI.edu, that's NOSSI.edu, for degree program details, faculty information, and student work.
All right, let's get right into it. Today we have actor Jaren Bray as our guest, and he is a retired MMA fighter, an actor, a filmmaker, a stunt performer, and perhaps most notably, a fight choreographer. He holds local group workshops, with which Mark and I have both attended, and offers individual coaching for actors who want to learn proper and safe techniques for shooting realistic fight scenes. He recently released a short film showcasing both his choreography and his acting called Prey, which is available now on Vimeo. Welcome to the show, Jaren.
Hello.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Very excited to be here.
Absolutely.
When was it that we went to that workshop? Was it last fall? It was last fall sometime.
I remember it was raining.
Yeah, I think it was, we started doing them right around that time. I think you guys went to one of the first couple that we offered. So it was right around in the fall. I was in Atlanta, basically, like back and forth all summer. And then things kind of slowed down like around September. So that's when we started, you know, offering up the seminars just to kind of almost like outreach, just kind of connect with local creatives and actors and things like that. And there's people on the team now who like are training with us full time who I met through those free seminars. So I think it was definitely an endeavor well worth it.
Yeah, well, that's how we found out about you, right? Was we were on Facebook and I think you posted something about, hey, if actors, we belong to some actor groups, mm-hmm. and we wanted to, you had posted something about if you want to learn how to do some, a first course in stunt choreography, come on down. And so we thought that sounded pretty interesting. And we knew one of the people that was going to be there. And so we kind of came and we watched and learned. We learned a lot, actually. It was really cool.
Oh, great. Wow. Yeah. That's great to hear. Cause I mean, you guys, if I have anything to say that you guys haven't heard before, I'll take the compliment.
Oh,
but
sure.
I remember I specified that it was for actors and filmmakers alike because right. like we talked about on that day, I think it's, you know, it's a two-way street. I think an unprepared performer obviously is going to make like choreography or an action scene of some kind suffer. But then if the filmmakers themselves, if the camera's not where it's supposed to be or the direction isn't what it's supposed to be or even just the editing after the fact, they can take a wonderful performance and, you know, just kind of throw it away in a sense.
That's kind of why we went, was because we wanted to learn how to work with mm-hmm. an actor who's doing a stunt sequence or a fight sequence. And neither of us had any experience with that. So it was a good for us to be there.
It's really interesting. I actually was just on a music video shoot, a couple weekends ago. And, the woman who was directing, she does a lot of music videos. This, you know, I'm not their accountant, but just being on set, you got the impression that this was a pretty expensive production that they were undertaking for this video. And they had me on there to coordinate and perform a fight scene, kind of in the middle of all this other stuff that's going on. And the woman had made the comment that she was very excited to work with us today because she had never done any kind of like fight scene or action or anything like that before. And I just remember that was really, it was just kind of, it struck me because I think most people would look at her situation as a filmmaker and be like, wow, that's the dream, you know, making these music videos, six figure budgets, constantly working, and to have made it that far and have never even rolled camera on action or any kind of violence before it was really surprising. But you know, that's just how things are, I think, a lot of times.
Tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are, your sure. background. I know that you were participating in MMA and training in the MMA, mm-hmm. Mixed martial arts. For those who don't know what MMA is, I barely know what MMA is.
Yeah,
I do know that it stands for mixed martial arts.
That's it. That's most of it.
And then I see you at this workshop, and so it's not one of those things I think that people kind of know is a real gig.
The mixed martial arts thing or the stunt stuff?
Both.
Sure. Yeah.
Both.
Well, as far as how I arrived here, I just stumbling, wandering through life, getting lucky over and over and over again, I guess, in a sense. I guess in a nutshell, I started doing martial arts and acting at a really young age, like 6-7 years old. And I did both of those things up until probably like middle school. You know that age where you kind of decide you're too cool for everything, you know? It's like, I want to go skateboard instead and like hang out with my friends. So stopped doing the martial arts. I stopped acting. And just, again, it's just a series of lucky happenstances in my life. So two things happened. One, I just so happened to be zoned for a high school in Clarksville, Tennessee, where the theater department was run by this couple who had previously run an off-Broadway theater in New York City, and they had retired. And I think their family, they had some medical issues in the family that was based out of Clarksville. So they retired, I think sold their theater and then came to Clarksville. And I just so happened to go to the high school where they ran the theater program. And then also my dad, he was a military man. He convinced me at the last possible second to go out for their cross country team, like the long distance running team. And then while I was on that running team, I met several wrestlers, guys who were on the high school wrestling team. So then that set me on the path of doing this very serious, very, very intense, high level theater program with the high school, as well as wrestling for that high school. I kind of fell headfirst into those two things. The wrestling eventually kind of became too much to maintain along with the acting. There's a repertory theater in Clarksville called the Roxy. So between the high school and that repertory theater, I think there was another black box theater. I did like 26 productions.
Wow.
All through those 3-4 years of high school. And then when I graduated, I'd gotten a small scholarship for the theater program at Austin Peay. And in my infinite brilliance, I didn't realize. So I got offered the scholarship and I was very excited. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to college and do theater. That's amazing. And I went to my first day of orientation and one of the counselors pulled me aside and she said, hey, I couldn't help but notice you haven't signed up for your math or your science or your foreign language or any of that stuff. Like, oh, no. And I'm on a theater scholarship, so I'm good.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not at all how that works. You have to do your core curriculum. We're just covering some of your tuition because of, you know, your theater accomplishments or whatever. You still have to go to regular college. You're not in some kind of special theater college. And I still say to this day, one of the smartest things I ever did was right then and there. I just said, no, thank you. It's like, oh, well then I'm good. Never mind. And I found out after the fact, I dropped out like 3 days before it was like the financial cutoff. So, I mean, it wasn't like a full scholarship. They were covering some amount of the tuition, but I still was going to be on the hook for however much through student loans. And I left. I just, again, just luckily, I just wandered away 3 days before I would have been on the hook for it. And then from there, the reason I specifically mentioned the wrestling thing is because some of my friends who I'd made on that team, they had graduated before I did. And the thing about wrestling is it's not like a recreational sport. It's not like basketball where you go play at the YMCA or whatever it is. And so you know, you put all this time into it and then you graduate and it's like, what now?
Yeah.
Well, for a lot of wrestlers, it became mixed martial arts. That kind of became like the hobby that you could do with that somewhat of a martial arts background. I guess wrestling is technically a martial art. So they had gotten into MMA. And so I started training with them. And then same thing. I just fell headfirst into that and started competing. I fought in MMA for like 5-6 years. And while that was happening, then all the theater stuff fell by the wayside again because I was fully focused on fighting. And then I moved up here to Nashville to kind of train at more serious, high-profile gyms. And then there was something in the back of my head about there's pursuits here in Nashville for acting. So that wasn't like completely off my radar, but I was still pretty focused on the mixed martial arts. And then right around the time they started coming out with the I don't know if you guys remember, like, 5-6 years ago, the NFL had these traumatic brain injury studies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was kind of a wake up call for me that this probably wasn't the smartest pursuit in the world, you know? So I then inverted back to like fully focusing on the acting, which had kind of been set aside. I think I had an agent at the time, but I wasn't really like actively pursuing it. It was like a very passive thing. And so basically, right when I started pursuing the acting again, I just, again, very luckily, got cast on a film where there was some big fight scene, and they saw on my resume that, you know, I had the background in MMA. So I got brought on to do this fight scene, and I just hit it off with the coordinator, who he had just come back from Atlanta to start working full-time here in Nashville and was kind of building up a team and trying to get himself established here. And I worked with him for about 5-6 years. And then last year, he essentially retired and moved up to Ohio to get his doctorate. He's a pretty interesting guy, yeah. And left me essentially the fight team to take over and kind of move things forward from there.
I'm glad you mentioned the team, because I made a note to ask you about that, because you mentioned stunt team. What is your stunt team? How does that work?
Yeah, it's interesting. I probably wouldn't even really have an answer for you a year ago. It is a loose affiliation of stunt professionals at various levels of proficiency. We essentially, I define it as we have three different groups of people on the stunt team. We kind of have our veterans who have been training for years and years, and they've kind of settled into call me when there's work. You know, like, they've put the work in, they're skilled, they know what they're doing, they can be relied on. And, you know, they're just, you know, let me know if there's a gig, I'll be happy to come do it. And then we have like our core group, about 4 or 5 people, Kyle Rankin, who kind of connected us. He's one of them. And they're sort of the newer people on the team, but they've been training for a year or two now. They've started to get really skilled, very talented. And they're the people that are probably the most active on the team, like constantly training, constantly picking up new skills. We're always sort of collaborating amongst that core group of 4 or 5 people, making, you know, shorts, fight scenes, whatever it is. And those are typically like our go-to people for sending out stunt performers when I get approached. And then we have another group of like 4 or 5 people that are kind of new to the team, who I would probably use or recommend for pretty simple, straightforward things, and probably only under the context of a set that I was on as well. I guess that's another thing that I should mention is, you know, that core group, Kyle, and some other people, those are people that I would be more than happy to send off to a set. You know, go have fun. I trust you to know what you're doing and stay safe and keep an eye on everything. And then, yeah, so like I said, we have this third group that, you know, they've got like core fundamental skills. They can be safe doing a lot of like simple things, but I wouldn't necessarily be comfortable just sort of sending them out into the world to go, you know, just be on a set without someone to keep an eye on him.
I can imagine somebody might bring in somebody to do a stunt, and then maybe the terms or the description of the job changes on set.
Sure, yeah.
And gets more complicated. Mm-hmm. And then that third group wouldn't really know how to handle that if you weren't there.
Yeah, and something that I preach to anyone around here who's interested at all in stunt performing, fighting on camera, anything like that, is you have to be prepared to arrive on set. And if you get hired in the capacity of a stunt performer, most times around here in Tennessee in general, just sort of keep it in the back of your head and be prepared that you're probably being hired to be a stunt coordinator and a stunt performer. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of sets that I've arrived at, you know, director, nicest people in the world, but they don't know. And so they come up to you and they say, okay, so you two are going to fight. It's going to be over here.
And action.
So, you know, let me know. Yeah. Like, you know, that's it. That's the, we have an inside joke on the team, and they fight, because the number of scripts that we get, where it's just this beautiful prose and these amazing, amazing scripts, these stories that are being told. And then, you know, the drama of the scene is building, and everything is so eloquently written out. And then it just says, and then they fight. And as a coordinator, you're like, oh, okay,
your turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of the few aspects in a film that just gets completely dumped off sometimes.
How would you differentiate between there being a stunt versus being a fight?
That's like an interesting question. Yeah. I mean, the other thing to keep in mind too is, you know, you get out to like Atlanta, for instance, where you have a lot more SAG productions. I mean, like anything is a stunt.
Isn't it like when the actor's feet leave the ground?
I don't know what like the written out bylaws are. I think there actually is kind of some negotiating and communicating to some extent between producers and the stunt coordinator as far as like what constitutes bringing in his stunt people versus what doesn't. But yeah, as best as I can tell, you know, by like the SAG standards, or if you want to just call it like the Atlanta standards, because even non-SAG stuff out there tries to kind of like hold to those standards. I mean, like anything. I've been out on productions where they brought in a stunt team because a car was passing near. You know, they have like a crowd of people that are, a crowd of reporters trying to, you know, flag down the car. Hey. And that whole first row has to be paid stunt performers, because they're technically they're close to a moving car. You know, cars going like 10 miles an hour, but still, in Tennessee, the standards definitely aren't that.
Right.
Which is actually part of the reason that I do like teaching these courses. I think they are a lot more useful for actors in Tennessee than they necessarily would be in other markets, because, you know, for better or for worse, I think actors get asked to do a lot more dodgy things than you would in some of these bigger markets. So knowing how to fall down, knowing how to throw punches and things like that, I think here in Tennessee are almost like a required skill set a lot of times. But for me personally, I think anytime you're falling, anytime you're banging into a surface, I would consider that a stunt. Mm-hmm. Anytime that there's a risk to performers, because if you really just kind of want to be like cold and calculated about it, a lot of these studios, it's just, we can't have our big actor get hurt. So if there's even a chance he's going to roll his ankle, bring in the double.
Yeah.
And I mean, even nowadays, these actors have like multiple doubles. They'll have two or three doubles, because we need a double in case the double gets hurt. And then also, the skill sets have become so specific that you'll have a double that does the acrobatics, and then you'll have the double that does maybe more of just like the martial arts fight stuff. And then you've got your ground and pounder. You might have three or four guys for one action star, because I don't necessarily want my trained martial artist getting thrown into the side of a building on a wire. You know, if that's like some kind of sketchy impact, you know, we're going to be as safe as possible, but let's maybe, if we've got the money for it, protect our guy who's learned all this fight choreography and is kind of our go-to fight guy. Let's just get, you know, they call him a ground and pounder, to just take the bang. We'll pay him the money for it, and then, you know, send him on his way and try to keep our quote unquote more skilled stunt guys in our back pocket.
Interesting. I think on our film, we had something that probably qualified as a stunt, and we talked it over with our lead actor and we wanted, and his agent, and we wanted to make sure that we were being safe. And all he had to do, he was sitting in a chair, mm-hmm. not a rocking chair, just a regular chair on a porch, on the porch of a cabin. And he was going to be sort of tackled and fall over backwards.
Tackled in the chair?
Yeah. While he's seated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a stunt.
Yeah.
His feet left the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, getting tackled in a chair is actually a little tricky.
Yeah. So we were like, okay, you know, we didn't have a stunt coordinator, and we figured out, we bought a big crash pad and put it behind mm-hmm. him, and mounted the chair on a piece of like 4x4 plywood with the back legs hinged.
Oh yeah.
And so when he got rushed, he just fell out of frame mm-hmm. and then landed on, you know, a massive foam pad.
Yeah.
And then we could reset it because the plywood, we just stand the chair back up, get everybody back in place, do another take. And it's just,
yeah, that's probably exactly what a stunt coordinator would do. So it sounds like you guys,
I'm going to put stunt coordinator.
That's
it.
Yeah.
We can put stunt coordinator.
That's right. By the standards of Tennessee actors, you can now list stunt coordinator as a skill set.
Well, we went through it with him and with his agent, and we rehearsed it ourselves. Yeah. And we felt like we were in control mm-hmm. with the hinges, the way we did it. And so that we didn't, of course, I mean, you ask anybody, did you see, why, how did you not see this could have happened?
Oh yeah.
You know,
for sure.
But we felt pretty sure that there was no way this could go bad. Yeah, otherwise we wouldn't have done it.
I was on a set where a girl fell out of a chair. She's shooting herself in this like dream sequence. And she just has to kind of like limply fall out the side of the chair, and she hurt herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of landed weird on her elbow. And it was, you know, one of the simplest things in the world, but that's just a good example sometimes about how everything is a stunt by, you know, the standards of SAG or whatever. And, you know, the thing is, you can look at some type of action that's described in a script, and it, you know, it's like someone gets thrown out a window. And that's why I think it's so important for stunt performers and especially stunt coordinators to understand filming and editing, because the way that you shoot that could either be completely non-invasive, like don't even need to bring in a stunt performer if you shoot it in a specific way, versus like we're going to put a stunt guy out the window, you know, onto a big stack of boxes or, you know, an inflatable pad or whatever it is. It just kind of depends on how you go about it. You know, it's just something as simple as stacking a punch, which is, you know, keeping the camera and the performer in a straight line for when a hit lands. If you understand how to stack a punch, you almost don't even need to bring in a stunt performer. You can get two actors that are 10 feet away from each other. And I mean, they couldn't hit each other if they tried, and it'll look great because you've got that straight line. There's no distance perspective. So if you understand like how to shoot it, you can actually save yourself a lot of times from, you know, having to bring in stunt performers or stunt coordinators or whatever that is, because then you understand like the little tricks where you make it safe with the camera, you make it safe with the editing, rather than actually like having someone just go all out. I mean, it's funny, the number of times that unfortunately that I've been brought in to do stuff, and it's just these gnarly, like, you know, getting thrown down flights of stairs or getting thrown into walls and just crazy stuff. And then you look at the final product and the way that they edit it, the way that they cut it, like, I didn't even have to do that. Like I didn't even have to do the real thing.
Thanks.
You guys just, yeah, exactly. It's, and again, it's just, they don't know what they want. And so they're like, I don't know, just shoot it from a bunch of different angles and then we'll see what it cuts together like.
Right.
And then, you know, it turns out they probably didn't even need me the way that they edited. You know, it's just motion in and then a landing, and then the landing is, you know, up close to where you can't even really tell how far you're going, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You could have just had your actor do it.
You know? We have a second, I would call it a stunt in our film that we're going to try to work around, actually, because in the script, one of our actors gets startled and falls and hits her head on the dresser.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen too many times on films where that exact kind of scenario, the person gets startled or punched or hit or thrown or trips, and you see them, what looks like a believable fall,
mm-hmm.
and then they cut to like a little dink where they hit their head on something. And it's like, it looks so bad. I think we're going to try to work our way around that so that we don't have to fool with it. Like it'll be better and easier to pull off if we don't do it exactly as the script said.
Yeah.
And we just have her panic and fall in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how we do that, we may actually have you come out and help us with that.
Yeah, of course. I'm more than happy to.
It's fairly simple, but it's also not controlled like the chair on the hinges.
Yeah.
And there is room for error. And we want to make sure we don't screw that up.
I think a lot of times coordinators have an instinct to make things look as good as possible, or maybe I'd use the word realistic as possible. That's sort of like the challenge of the job, and that's always what they're striving for. But sometimes that's not necessarily what the story needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you're telling a story. So as a stunt coordinator, my instincts are like, okay, so what do we need preparation wise? What do we need on the day to just give a visceral, violent, you know, almost the audience sort of leaning back in their chairs, kind of a reaction to this lady cracking her head. But then maybe that's not what the story needs. Maybe you don't need a moment where the audience is going, oh, geez. Maybe that doesn't serve like the story that's being told. So it's important for the, like I said, for the filmmakers, directors, producers to kind of have some sort of understanding of this stuff so that they can kind of be in control of the story that's being told, you know?
What are some examples, if you can, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm curious about some of the things that you get asked, some of the problems you get asked to solve
mm-hmm.
with your action scenes and fights. And if you can think of an example of something that really was required you to get creative.
Oh, sure.
And the, you know, your plan A, your plan B, your plan C didn't work. It was an intricate or a difficult kind of situation. And then I hope I remember the second part of this question, which is that it seems to me that doing stunts for comedy might actually be harder than doing stunts for drama, because in a comedy, you are trying to keep the mood light and it's supposed to be funny,
mm-hmm.
but very, very frequently, if it's physical comedy or if it's like a pratfall or if it's something like that, it is important to see someone do the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So I like just those two questions about what's an example of a problem that you typically ask to solve, and then comedy versus, you know,
so
more
action. As far as comedy versus drama, it's interesting. I was just talking the other day to the team about this. Something that I say all the time is there's never a right or wrong way to do anything, you know, when it comes to fighting or stunt work or just, you know, moving your body on camera. It's just whether or not it's appropriate for the material, you know? And I think in that specific instance, one of our newer performers, she was having a hard time performing this specific kind of a flip into a fall. And she was having all this kinetic energy that was sort of causing her to like sit up at the end of the fall. And she was, no pun intended, she was beating herself up about it. And I showed her the example of, you can really like emphasize that and it becomes funny. You know, if you get, you know, thrown out of the bar and you go head over heels and then you land and you kind of do that goofy, you know, you're sitting up and the proverbial birds are spinning around your head and then you just flop backwards. That's funny. You know, it's not wrong. It just might not necessarily be correct for the material. So it's tough because a lot of times it's just a feeling. You look at something and, you know, is this funny or is this dramatic? You know, because the reason it becomes complicated is because sometimes, you know, sometimes things that are very shockingly violent, if it's contextualized in the right way, is really funny. Like, you know, everyone loves those Jackass movies, you know, for a reason. You know, as long as we know no one's really getting hurt, it's kind of funny to see some of these like shockingly violent things happen to people. So it's not necessarily like this hard, fast rule that like violence for comedy kind of needs to be a certain way versus like drama a certain way. Because maybe sometimes even in a drama, if it's too violent, maybe it becomes melodramatic. Maybe it, you know, becomes like schmaltzy, right? So maybe you want to pull the violence back a little bit for that reason. Or maybe in a comedy, it needs to be even more violent. It needs to be more visceral, right? And that just makes it funnier in that specific sense. So, you know, unfortunately, I think the answer is it's just kind of like being there, like in the moment. And then also, of course, in the editing bay, cutting it together and just kind of flowing from one shot to the next shot to the next shot. Like, does this kind of put a smile on my face if that's the goal? Or does this make me feel really enthralled in what I'm looking at, really captured by this sequence if the, you know, if the goal is drama? As far as being on set, kind of being set with challenges and things like that, I kind of alluded to it before, but unfortunately the nature of the job around here is, I mean, that's basically every set. You more often than not are going to arrive on set with not enough time to prepare with your performers, probably not necessarily even have a delineation between coordinator and performers. I think now recently, because I've kind of established like this team, they've been hiring within the team. So that gives us a little bit of time to prepare. And there's a little bit of familiarity that we have with each other, but there's a lot of times you just show up on set and it's like, hey, meet the person you're going to be fighting in 2 hours. You guys want to go figure that out? And so my job becomes, and I think it's like any other job on set, whether it's, you know, the DP or like any of these types of like creative positions, is you are trying to interpret what the director wants as best as you can. And I think I have the disadvantage of the director probably is going to be the least familiar with my skill set as opposed to, you know, lighting or the camera or just like gaffing in general, any of that stuff. But you are basically trying to translate his language into your language. You know, so I typically have a series of like 5 or 6 questions that I ask every director about a fight scene that I think most efficiently gets to the core of what it is that they want. I mean, so that's kind of my job, is to like distill, and then come up with something that I think represents what I interpret to be their vision. Now, the one advantage to my job is that they're the least familiar with what I do. And so I would say more often than not, I put something together and they're kind of like, whoa, wow, yeah, great. Even something in my mind where I'm like, God, I can't quite make this work like I want it to work, but it's close. Let me just go show them. And then I show it to the director and he's like, my God, how did you? And I'm like, oh.
Genius.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, fine, whatever. Yeah. You know, I'm sure it's similar to, you know, like a DP just doesn't have some, like the lighting that he wants. But if he's, you know, really skilled DP, you could still show that image to the average person. They're blown away. And in the back of his mind, he's like, oh my God, you don't even understand. You know, the blah, blah, blah didn't work. And I couldn't quite get the camera where I wanted to, but you know, they don't really see that. As far as like specific challenges, that's an interesting question. Like I said, just on a lot of sets, getting there on the day and, trying to find ways to accomplish what the director wants with little to no prep time and trying to keep it safe. That's kind of the big thing that I'm always sort of challenging myself, is to remember you got to keep this safe, because, you know, maybe there is a solution to what the director wants. And maybe I'm thinking to myself like, let's go for it. But that's not the safe way, especially, you know, maybe I'll take that risk onto myself as a performer, but certainly not asking another performer to do something that they just didn't have enough preparation time. I guess in a broader sense, probably a lot of what I end up doing around here is either like recreating like real like boxing matches or like MMA fights, that kind of thing, or the opposite, just like bar brawls. And ironically, as a choreographer or a coordinator, I kind of find the bar brawls to be more challenging, because the challenge creatively is, okay, how do we make this visually interesting? How do we make this not repetitive visually, but then also we don't stray into the territory of making these two people look too skilled? I mean, if they're two drunk guys get into a bar brawl, we can't exactly have a kung fu fight. Right. I mean, there's only
sloppy.
Yeah. Your bag of tools is very, very shallow. And so it's just finding a way to kind of like mix and match. A lot of what I try to do as much as possible is just use the environment you know, we had a comedy music video where there was a couple fighting in the kitchen. And so, you know, just having the girl like swing the microwave door open and hit the guy in the face and, you know, trying to use these like prop kitchen utensils as weapons and things like that. So yeah, just trying to, I would say generally speaking for a fight choreographer, the challenge is putting together a fight that is what the director wants to see first and foremost. And then, putting it together in such a way that it's interesting. It doesn't become repetitive. And then just kind of understanding as a martial artist, understanding that maybe something that's interesting to me, because I understand the nuances or the specifics about what's happening, isn't necessarily going to be interesting to just the average person. They just want to watch something. You know, you mentioned Prey. I can't decide if I take it as a compliment or if it's just really bugs the hell out of me, but in that entire sequence, spoiler alert, at the end of the film where she starts beating me up, there's all of these tons and tons of like real world martial arts techniques, judo, and Muay Thai, and you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and blah, 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 blah. And the one comment that I get more than anything else is like the most made up pro wrestling nonsense move in the entire sequence, but people love it. They thought it looked super cool. And I almost didn't put it in because it was so over the top, but you know, it just worked for me in the edit, and then I kept it. And that's the one thing that people respond to the most. Just to me, the one thing that's the most silly, like the most nonsense of the whole thing. And right. So, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. I'm sure you guys, you've taken pictures or videos or things, and sometimes the things people respond to just perplex you.
Yeah,
you know.
So let's assume we don't exactly know who our audience really is, but let's assume that they are filmmakers and actors.
Sure.
Well, let's say filmmakers and directors primarily.
Okay.
What would be the best case scenario be for, I have a stunt I need done, or I have a fight sequence. Let's go with fight sequence. I have a fight sequence that I want to do, and I want it to look a certain way, and I come to you. What's the best case scenario for you in terms of preparation?
Well, that's what's so interesting about this job is that's a conversation. You know, there's questions that get asked at that stage. You know, how long is this going to be? How long is this actual fight scene going to be? I mean, you'd be maybe not surprised how many times directors, they don't even know. You know, how long do you want the fight to be? Oh, I didn't even, I don't know, as long as a fight lasts, I guess. Right? So.
And they fight.
Right, 100%. So how long do you want this fight to be? How do you plan on shooting this fight? Do you have like a style? I mean, so that's another thing that I like to do is I have like a repertoire of different kinds of fight scenes and movies that I can send to them. Because, you know, if we're going to do shaky cam, 22 cuts in a 40-second sequence, yeah, we can just bring me the actors the day before for, you know, 2-3 hours. We'll have something ready. Make sure I'm on set on the day to kind of keep things going in the direction we're supposed to be going in. But yeah, we're fine. You know, if you're going to chop this thing, shoot it from 25 different angles and you plan in the editing room to cut it up and, you know, a lot of shaky cam and the goal is to kind of make this like really disorienting and like uncomfortable for the audience to view, that's easy. If you want to do a 1 minute long uninterrupted single take fight scene, well, that's a different conversation. You know, and it also just depends, is this going to be a brawl? Is this going to be two people who are skilled, know what they're doing? Because, you know, the thing about shooting a fight scene between two people who in your mind are skilled martial artists is you either need to hire skilled martial artists or you need to train the actors long enough to be able to at least somewhat competently pretend to be skilled martial artists. So there's a ton of different things that are involved, but I would say like your average, you know, these two characters get mad at each other. They're going to brawl around for 30, 40 seconds. You know, we're going to shoot it 5-6 different angles. We'll give it like half a day for the shoot. Yeah. I think maybe like a day or two, probably like 2 days of preparation, probably like a day to sort of teach them general safety protocols and basics. And then another day to go over the actual like fight choreography, that's probably enough. But you know, the more prep time you put in, the better it's going to be. And then also, the more ability you will have as a filmmaker, as a director on the day to pivot with problems, to react to the million and one catastrophes that we all know come up on set. So, you know, if you have like a fairly simple fight scene, and so we put in a couple hours of training with the actors, and then all of a sudden we got behind on time, and now the sun isn't where it was supposed to be, and now we have to move this fight to a different location. Well, these actors are going to be like fish out of water because they did all their preparation to do this fight in one spot, and then now it's someplace completely different. And, you know, good luck on that learning curve when you move it like that. But if you hired two stunt doubles, you can do that fight wherever. They're ready to shoot that thing however you want. I mean, part of my job is adjusting whatever my vision is on the fly. You know, the camera needs to jump from this side of the person, the other side of the person. Cool. We'll change the choreography right here, right now for that, and we'll make it work. But if you're just using, you know, kind of your regular actors and they aren't properly like prepared and properly trained, the second anything goes wrong, the whole thing could just fall apart.
Does the director and cinematographer ever attend sort of one of your actor training sessions?
Oh yeah.
I would suppose that showing up toward the end of the training session, however many days that is, mm-hmm. would enable them to pre-visualize and see what yep. it's going to look like. Maybe not so much early in the training, because that's just preliminary stuff that maybe mm-hmm. isn't useful, but certainly I would think the director and maybe cinematographer ought to be there to watch you train at least toward the latter part of the training.
Oh, for sure. And there's almost no such thing as the director or the filmmaker being too involved. I mean, other than just kind of like maybe sort of like nitpicking the thing while it's being created, for sure. But as far as them just being present, like wanting to watch and
learn. Like,
yeah, 100%. There's almost no such thing as them being too involved. We will shoot typically kind of our own in-house pre-visualizations for fight scenes, action scenes, if we're afforded the time to do it. And then we'll pass those along to the director. But yeah, we always prefer that they come in. And then particularly, I mean, I would say even more so than the director, if I had to pick one or the other, for whatever reason, I could only have one, I would rather have the DP. Mm-hmm. come in, like who's going to, not even necessarily the DP, like literally the cameraman to come in, because I mean, for some of these sequences, the camera guy is every bit part of the choreography. They need to hit certain marks just like the stunt performers do. They need to be certain places at certain focal lengths, you know, right along with the performers. And so having that camera guy trained up on what this fight scene is going to look like is almost just as important as having the actors or the stunt performers themselves trained up.
When we came to your workshop, we noticed that you were shooting it with just a cell phone. Mm-hmm. Like once you kind of got a couple of people together and you sort of improvised something, that you became a cinematographer or a camera operator, and just even with your cell phone would shoot it. But you, having had the luxury of being the one who designed it, you knew exactly where to be, what height, what proximity,
yeah.
and you knew how to involve yourself in the dance.
100%.
And I thought that was really cool to watch. That was one of our takeaways, was that you knew exactly where to be and when.
Another thing that directors can do that's a huge service to their performers, in my opinion, I know there's different styles or different approaches, and you know, take everything I say with a grain of salt, but in my opinion, is knowing how you want to cut this fight together ahead of time is so important. It's so, so important. If your performers only have to do 10, 20 seconds of a minute and a half long fight scene, because you know that at roughly the end of this sequence, we're actually going to flip it to the other performer. That's so, because why would they do the whole fight? A minute and a half long fight scene. I mean, I've thrown up on set before, doing these long, like single take fight scenes. And now everyone's exhausted. The quality is going down massively, like these long scenes. Whereas if you are confident enough in your edit to go, we're going to go from maybe we'll go 5 seconds before, 5 seconds after, but we're going to go basically from this spot to this spot, hard as you can, nail it. Boom. 2-3 takes, move on to the next shot. 2-3 takes, move on to the next shot. You're going to get such a stronger performance from from your actors or from whoever it is that's doing the fighting, because they're just able to like conserve their energy. And the day is going to go by so much faster because you're not breaking. You're not having mess ups in the fight. Like the longer a fight goes, something's going to go wrong. You know, it's so, so hard to do a predetermined minute and a half long fight scene. I mean, I think one of the funniest things is when I start working with new performers and we'll put in days and days and days and days of prep. And then they finally get to a point where they're comfortable going at like 75, 85% speed after days of putting in all this work, learning all these different moves, all these different sequences. And now they're going 85% speed and they go, oh my God, this is 30 seconds. Like, yeah, about 38 seconds. We're gonna tweak a couple things. It'll be 38 seconds. All that work to just put in that brief little sequence. So I think people don't realize necessarily how much work goes into such a small amount of time, like how much energy you're expending. A minute and a half in a fight scene. Next time you're watching an action movie, it's a long, long time. That's a long time to be fighting. So as much as you can save your performers from having to do that, you know, the better.
I was thinking about the difference between like the Kingsman fight scene in the church versus Atomic Blonde sequence, where they seem to be a lot longer versus a lot choppier.
Oh yeah. No. So both of those sequences, for anyone who doesn't know, both of those sequences, if you watch, well, there's two levels of watching carefully. If you watch on the kind of like the more surface level carefully, you'll realize that the camera never cuts. Those are continuous, I'll use air quotes, continuous shots in that church scene. And then for the Atomic Blonde, the stairwell scene, I think is probably the most famous. And then like the next level of watching carefully is you'll realize they're actually cutting over and over and over again. And they're just using tricks of the camera to hide the moments where the camera is cutting. And again, that's just a style. I personally love that style. I think it's the hardest to pull off, both from a technical filmmaking perspective and then also from like a performer's perspective. But to me, and this kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier about, you know, coordinators, their instinct is always going to be to kind of like go in this certain direction. For me, the pinnacle of action is as long of a take as you think serves the edit, makes sense in the story. Let the sequence play out. Let the performers perform. You know, and again, ideally, speaking of Atomic Blonde, if you can get the actor trained up to the level where he or she is doing that action, and then is able to be an actor while also doing the martial arts, and you're not having to switch back and forth between, you know, a double performing the martial arts and then an actor, your performance is going to be so much better. And I think the film in general is going to be so much stronger. If you watch that Atomic Blonde sequence where she's just dying out there, and the acting performance is unbelievable, and then the martial arts are all on point as well. I mean, to me, that's kind of that's the goal. Like, that's the pinnacle. But you know, that's not necessarily right for everyone. I mean, those Bourne movies were some of the most like celebrated action movies of the early 2000s. And if you watch those things, it's chop, 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 just cuts everywhere. I think they started cutting less as the series went on. Maybe as Matt Damon kind of got more and more skilled. But I don't think those fight scenes necessarily suffered because they were so cut up and choppy. Like, I don't necessarily think they were quote unquote bad. It was just a different style.
It's evident now, listening to you talk about what you do, so much of it depends on solid technique. And in a given fight scene or sequence, when you understand what's supposed to happen, you can pull from your repertoire of techniques and skills things to achieve this. Mm-hmm. So my question is, where's the room for the creativity? Where does the creativity come in?
Sure.
And when do you feel like you're being creative and not just simply taking this technique and putting it here and not taking that and putting this technique here?
Yeah, it's interesting. Something that I'm actually trying to do right now is I'm sort of stepping out of my comfort zone and trying to learn a lot more of these, at least in my opinion, kind of like esoteric martial arts. I've been getting into like Wing Chun and Kung Fu and trying to branch out. Cause I think the more martial arts you know, the more creative you're going to be able to be, the more things you're able to pull from. I think my fight choreography has improved dramatically the more and more and more diverse martial arts techniques I've learned. Because at the end of the day, if you're not even like aware of something as a possibility, then you can't use it as a solution. So I'm striving right now to just try to learn as much martial arts technique as possible.
Seems like to me, and maybe you would agree, that in all of the repetition that you have to go through in putting these sequences together, so you work it out, you can just go through it over and over and over again. For me personally, that's where you start to be creative, because you start to understand the rhythm of what you're doing, and then instead of doing this one thing this way and ending like this, you do it and then you put a little flourish on the ending.
Sure.
Or you reverse it and do something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still the same basic action, but it's through the repetition over and over and over again where you start to be able to put your own sort of stamp on it and have the actors do things that are unique to them.
Yeah.
You know, based on what their physical ability is, or stature or whatever. You know, if it's a woman, she might do this at the end. It's the same basic action, as opposed to a guy who might have a different thing at the very end.
Yeah, you mean kind of like putting their personal touch on things a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but there has to be room for that, right? Like you just can't do it. Everybody can't just do it the same way.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with fight choreography, because I would say that's, I agree with that 100%. In the writing process, like writing the choreography, and then kind of like in the early stages of rehearsals, because things are still trying to be like established at that point. But then the other, I would say even more important part of my job is safety and keeping everyone safe. So once things are kind of locked in at a certain point, they need to go that way every single time, exactly that way, or at least as exactly as, you know, within reason, just to keep everyone safe. So yeah, it's a weird combination of being like hyper creative, but then at a certain point becoming very rote and like very, very stringent in how things are done, and then repeating that over and over and over again.
So the creativity is in the design of the fight, less so than the execution of it, because mm-hmm. by that time you've rehearsed it, you know what you're doing, you're just doing it to the best of your ability.
100%.
Maybe it's different than the design of the thing.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of goes back to the advice for filmmakers about putting in the prep time, or maybe just you know, hiring people who kind of have the skills or the abilities, because the more... So if I was on set and I have two actors that maybe I've put in like a day of preparation work with, and one of the actors comes up to me and says, you know, I was thinking, instead of me punching with this right hand, what? And I was like, let me stop you right there. No, we're not changing anything. Don't come at this other person with some new stuff. Do exactly what we rehearsed, exactly as we rehearsed it. We're not doing any of that. But if I'm on set with two of my, you know, two of my guys or gals from my team, and she comes up to me and she says, you know, what if instead of throwing this punch, because I feel like I've done that same right hand a couple of times, what if I just threw like a head kick? You know, it's going the same direction, but he just ducks that instead of ducking the punch. And you know, she's a trained stunt professional. She's been doing this for years. And I would go, oh yeah, like, let's try that. Well, bring him over here and let's let him know that that's what you're going to do instead. But yeah, let's go for
it. Let's surprise him with that.
Yeah, exactly.
How he handles that.
Yeah, you're going to get the most realistic take you've ever shot.
It's like improv at that point, because mm-hmm. in order to be good at improv, regardless of the discipline that you're practicing, whether it's comedy or music or painting, you have to know your fundamentals, and you have to be solid at the fundamentals of what you're doing before you can start riffing.
Oh, 100%.
On things.
Yeah, and that's something that I preach a lot to actors that I train, is that putting in the time and putting in the training to know how to do a lot of this stuff, falling down, throwing punches, just being violent you know, like grabbing a hold of someone, you know, pushing someone, whatever, grabbing someone around the neck or whatever, the more repetition that you put in understanding how to do that safely, the more freedom you give yourself to do that kind of improv and to flow. And because I'm comfortable right now. We could improv a scuffle, you know, where someone gets shoved up against the wall, someone gets choked by someone, I mean me, doing all of these violent things, because I've just put in so many years of training. It's just second nature to do it safely. And I can be in the moment and be creative. And then everything that I'm doing is instinctively controlled. Now, that's not the safest thing in the world, and that's not ideal, but it's definitely like a possibility. So something that I always talk to actors about, you know, when you're in class doing scene work and things like that, one of the biggest things that you get preached to is always be present. Always be present. You know, when were you on? When were you off? On being like in the moment, off being like being aware of the fact that you're some idiot on a stage pretending to be some other idiot. And when you're thinking to yourself, okay, so after she says that line, I gotta choke her, but make sure I don't actually choke her. I think so. You gotta grab her around the, you know, like if you're now you're off, as they would say, you're completely out of the scene. You're not living in the moment. You're not in that argument anymore. You're thinking about the little technicalities of how you're about to pretend to choke this other performer.
And the viewer can see that.
Oh, 100%, in my opinion. And yeah. So if you know how to do that safely, almost just on instinct, you can 100% live in the scene and be in the moment and trust your training to go through the violence, if you will, in a safe way, even in the moment.
So I'm curious about where you notice creativity. You know,
to me, and this is something I think I learned from all of my years in mixed martial arts and in martial arts in general, the goal, you know, the penultimate expression is instinctual creativity, like creativity on the fly. Because it's one thing if I can sit down and wrestle a problem for a week and then eventually arrive at this very inventive solution. But to me, like the rubber meets the road, the real test of, you know, your preparation work is, can you be creative in that moment? You know, maybe it's in the middle of a fight while something is happening, or maybe it's on set. Maybe you have a problem that comes up. The director wants to change things and you've only got 5-10 minutes to fix this problem in such a way to make the film still work, make the fight scene still work, whatever it is. And so that to me is why you put in all of the prep work ahead of time, is so that you can be creative in the moment. Is there's so much knowledge, there's so much built up skill that you have the ability to where, when called upon in a very short period of time, you can be creative in that moment, rather than maybe if you don't necessarily have the preparation work, or if you don't have the knowledge built up ahead of time, your reactions are going to be very, very rote, very, very predictable. You know, if you guys got dropped on set, these two people are having a conversation and you're like, shoot his OTS, shoot his OTS, and shoot a two shot wide. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
You want to be able to be creative, like in those
accumulation of all of your hours of rehearsal and practice and, you know, trying things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's an accumulation.
Yeah. That's always been what has impressed me the most, is instinctual creativity. Someone who is just standing on set or, you know, standing in the cage, something happens, and then instantly their response in that moment was incredibly inventive. It was creative, was something that I never would have thought of. That's always really impressed me.
See that a lot in sports.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jaron, it's been fascinating having you on the show and learning about what you do. And I'm sure the next time that I watch an action sequence and there's a fight or there's an intense sequence of action, I'm going to be paying close attention to that. And I'm sure our listeners will be too, trying to identify the many ways these guys prepared and how they're suffering for their art.
Hopefully not too much.
Yeah. Before we let you go, we like to ask our guests about something that they're looking forward to. And Chris and I participate in this also. So can you tell us one thing that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. So we've got a lot of shorts right now that are kind of in the pipeline with our stunt team. We started self-producing content. You guys mentioned Prey, and we've got, we've got like six other films right now that are all in post-production, just various stages of trying to get those finished. I've learned a lot this past year about how difficult it is to actually like completely picture lock even a short film. It's really crazy the amount of work that goes into it. We're going to be submitting Prey for some various like action film fest, horror film fest. We'd love to see it in the Nashville Film Festival. So fingers crossed for that. Really looking forward to capping off some of these things that we've worked really hard on last year that I know everyone wants to see the finished product, and then excited to start getting underway with some new stuff as well.
That's excellent. Chris mentioned earlier he might be struggling with something he's looking forward to, and I volunteered that I have something that both of us are looking forward to that neither of you know about. And this is it. I'm looking forward to the fight scene that you choreograph where Chris and I beat each other up and we get someone to actually film this. And this is something I think we should do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Come over, you choreograph us up a fight scene, and then we get some people to film this.
Okay.
And then because I've been asked many times, do you guys ever disagree? I'm like, yeah, we butt heads all the time. What's it like working with Chris all the time? Don't you guys get sick of each other? And I think this would be a hilarious thing to do.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to coming over to your place again and coming up with a quick sequence, because I think he would kick my ass quickly.
High school wrestling's gonna pay off.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That we could film and show people.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Am I allowed to change my answer?
Absolutely.
I'm also looking forward to that.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm gonna need a stunt double for that.
We can make it. I've got a database. We'll find someone.
I don't bend like I used to.
No, but look, a spoonful of nachos with jalapenos in my eye is
there. You go.
It could be your preferred weapon
over lunch.
Perfect. Yeah. Hey, we want to thank Jaron for coming on today, and also we want to give a massive shout out to our sponsor, Nosy College of Art. Creativity in Motion is produced by the team at Penumbra Entertainment.
If you like the show, please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you really liked it, the best way you can support us is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Or on Spotify, you can rate the show right from the show's page in the Spotify app.
Follow Penumbra Entertainment on Facebook and Instagram. On both platforms, we are Penumbra Films. If you want to get show notes and occasional bonus content for this or any other episode, please make your way to our website at penumbra-ent.com, where you can find all the information about Jaron, where you can find him online, and links to his work. If you have any questions, we would love to hear from you. Please send them to us at creativity@penumbra-ent.com. If you have suggestions for topics you'd like us to talk about, please let us know. And if you know of someone that you think would be a great guest on this podcast, we would love to know about it. We hope you'll join us on the next episode of the Creativity in Motion podcast. In the meantime, remember, it takes a lot of preparation and practice if you want to be instinctively creative.